Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Today in Life Quest, I'm talking with Jamie Blaine. He's a licensed psychotherapist, certified crisis counselor. He's worked in psych wards, mega churches, rehabs, radio stations, and roller rinks, and we're going to talk to him about that. He's also an author. And today I'm going to talk to him about his book called Midnight Jesus, Where Struggle, Faith, and Grace Collide, The Late Night Psychiatric Crisis Guy. Jamie, welcome to Life Quest.
Oh, brother, thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
I am enjoying your book very much, but I need to ask you this right as we start.
Sure.
Why this book at this time?
So that's a big question. Let me see if I can give you a decent answer on it. I started really shortly after high school in the mental health business. And at a certain point, I said, well, you know, I always liked writing. I liked English. In fact, English and journalism was my first major. Or an early major in college, and I just always wanted to try my hand at writing and tell stories, mm-hmm. and I had no really intention of talking about mental health or the business or anything like that. In fact, I did this sort of to get away from the mental health business as a break from it. But, as those things go, the stories that I told that got the most attention, that people connected with the most, that just seemed to come out, were the stories from mm-hmm. working in psychiatric hospitals, from being on crisis calls, from, just from working in counseling centers. And those were the things that really resonated with people. And I came to a point where I realized these were the stories that God gave me to tell. And they were connecting with people in a different way, I guess, than the average Christian writing.
Right.
It was something you could give really to me, to anybody, agnostics, atheists, holy rollers.
Yeah.
I think when you tell stories from rock bottom, everybody can relate to that.
You haven't just worked in some kind of sterile clinic where you listen for 50 minutes and then say, would you do your copay over there? You've worked in all kinds of situations and connected with people in a variety of places. Explain to our listeners a bit about that.
Well, praise the Lord that I've never worked in those places because I don't, or I've worked very little in those places. I don't think I could do that, and God bless those people who are able to walk day in, day out with people in that environment. But, as you mentioned there, I've worked in roller rinks, and that's part of the story. And in telling that as a story, I was just this kid working at a roller rink when a psychiatric nurse came in and offered me a job at a hospital. That's how I got into the business. And the hospital was so busy and so understaffed that I sort of accelerated through the ranks very quickly.
Yeah.
I was driving the van, I was doing groups, and I became the person who answered the crisis calls late at night. So, because I was so hyperactive, I guess, a little ADD, I was not somebody who was going to sit and do a counseling session for 50 minutes. That would have been torture for me. But can I be the person who, goes out at 2 o'clock in the morning and climbs out on the railroad bridge? Absolutely.
You're connecting with people in a variety of situations. There had to be at some point before you had a lot of academic training where you had to decide when you needed to direct people to folks with more experience.
I had no experience when I started. I had no clue what I was doing. I was, like I said, shortly out of high school, but I had the maturity of a 13-year-old, and I looked like I was 13. It was definitely one of those situations where you had to say, God, what have you gotten me into here?
Right.
So, but you know what? Here's a really wonderful part of the story that I love to tell. Because I was so inexperienced and so lacking in confidence in my ability to go out and talk to somebody who was addicted to drugs, somebody who was having suicidal thoughts, somebody who was struggling with schizophrenia, because I was so overwhelmed with that, the only thing I knew to do was, first off, pray this very desperate prayer of, God, you better show up and you better help me, or this is a lost cause because I can't handle this on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, to be quiet and listen.
Yes.
I figured the less I talked, the less I could say something that would mess everything up.
Yeah.
And you know what? Ironically enough, that's what worked.
You must have discovered that there were a lot of people in a variety of situations that hadn't had people listen to them.
Yeah, you know, it's sad to say that. Boy, yeah, you're so right there. People just want to be listened to. People just want to be heard.
And when people don't listen to us, we shout louder or act out or whatever.
You know, I came up mostly in a Bible Belt town, and it was a smaller town.
Mm-hmm.
And I was part of a very evangelical church and very much a church of outreach, and I was an active part of that. And trust me, brother, I went out there, you know, with my bag full of Christian cliches and things to say and scriptures that, and I don't say this to, you know, I don't say this to offend any believers, but you find out when you get in the foxhole, when you get at the end of the rope, a lot of those things just don't work.
Okay.
And, you know, that doesn't help people. And what does help people is just to sit there with them in their worst moment and listen and give testimony that you're there with them in that darkest hour. And in that terms, you can only be Jesus to somebody. You can only just show up and be there.
On chapter 4, beginning, you give a quote below the title of that chapter where you said, Jesus was asked, in the Bible, 183 questions. He only directly answered 3, but he asked 307 questions.
Yeah.
That's great. That's better than any of the graduate theological courses I took, because it begins to say, wait a minute, we talk so much and we feel we have to answer every question. And as a Christian, you know, I was a lot smarter 40 years ago, Jamie, because people would ask me questions, and I would have, 14 Bible texts and 3 illustrations, and not so much now.
The older I get, the more I rely on that wise phrase, I don't know. And I had to get comfortable. I was forced into an environment and a situation to where I had to admit, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the answer to all of these things. I don't know why you're suffering. I don't know why you're going through this. I don't know why such bad things can happen to good people. I don't know. And that was very humbling and very difficult. It's still difficult for me to admit that.
But why may not be the most important question.
Yeah, you're so right there. You're so right.
I have talked to a number of people that have been through years of counseling, and they can diagnose themselves very well as to why they are the way they are, but they haven't moved on past it. In chapter 4, you were taking some psychology classes, and there were some things that you were told there that I thought were pretty good. And one of the things you said was that psychology is deep waters. At church, we obsess over answers. But in the psych class, it's different. You talk about the questions. And I like that, because sometimes we feel that we have to have this 25 words or less answers to everything.
Well, we all carry around so many questions with us, so many unanswered questions. And, you know, at the time I was I was going to a holy roller church, I guess some would call it.
Okay.
And I loved my church. But we were very set on having all the answers. In fact, at one time on our church sign, you know, we had, if you've got questions, we've got answers. And I don't mean to be postmodern or complicate all of that. And I believe that we did have some answers and some things that would help people through life and some principles. But when we obsess over the answers, that means that we have to invent things and we have to pretend.
Uh-huh.
And pretending is never the route to good health, mental health or physical health,
right,
or spiritual health. Pretending just makes us sicker. So, and actually my church was very suspicious of psychology and those things. So I sort of went into psychology, you know, sort of a little suspicious. But you know what? I found out it was just wonderful. All truth is God's truth. And it was such a blessing to have a place where we talked about the deeper things in life, and we were not obsessed over figuring out some formula mm-hmm. or some answer for everything.
In your book, you have all these short, in many cases, stories of encounters that you had, of situations that you confronted early on and later in your career, in your journey. People with substance abuses, people that had horrible backgrounds as children, which maybe had an effect as to why they were the way they were. Did you find some commonalities there in the people you were dealing with? Some things that were common to all of them, what their needs, what brought them to where they were?
You go out thinking that you're going to encounter some, you know, strange or derelict group of people or down and outers, but, you know, what I found out was it was my neighbors and my relatives and people that I went to church with, mm-hmm. and it was people with money and people with no money,
yeah.
and people who had great parents and people who had no parents. And I think that was, you know, when I was coming from a behavioral psychology background, boy, that was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We were all sort of susceptible to life and its disappointments and its struggles. And so to me, that common thread was something that could be taken as really sort of overwhelming and depressing, or something that was really beautiful.
Yeah.
We're all struggling down here, and grace had better be amazing, or we're all up the creek.
Mm-hmm.
So that ultimately gave me hope, and I think overall my book is about that struggle to come to terms with how much everybody is struggling.
Later on in your book, you quote a Dr. Cryer, who says we have to study Jesus' method. When it says that Jesus is a wonderful counselor, it says in Scripture.
Yeah.
And those characteristics are great here. He would listen but not judge, be patient, tell stories. That became your approach too, didn't it?
It had to be. And, you know, that was so ironic to me that I had been so active in church and I had heard so much about Jesus, and I thought I had it down, and then I go to, you know, this, I don't know if I would say agnostic, because in truth, most of my professors were active in their churches. They were, some of them were deacons,
and mm-hmm.
so you certainly wouldn't say that they were believers, but, I mean, just to be honest, we were warned if we went into to grad school to study some kind of science, to be sure that you know, the gospel took precedence. Don't let those professors infect your mind with their doubts and their cynicisms.
Right.
But here I was learning about this other side of Jesus in
these
classes. I had never thought of Jesus that way, but I would go and study just to make sure. I said, well, let me check this out.
Right.
And it was this other picture of Jesus that was so different, and it absolutely influenced me, and it gave me a path on how to go forth and how to keep working in this field. Yeah, absolutely.
Can you share with our listeners a couple of situations you confronted that have stuck in your mind? I mean, the book is full of them. I can tell our listeners, this is a great read. And it's a book, my staff and the people I connect with, my studio is in a church. I haven't been able to get through the book completely yet because everybody else wants to take a look at it.
Oh, but, brother, that's good news for me to say.
But I want to...
You're making my day.
Yeah, there's some characters or some situations you could share with our listeners that are in the book.
Sure. You know, one that I love to tell that I get just a lot of feedback that people love and that I certainly loved was this old drunk, and I don't say that in any sort of stigma or you know, critical sort of way. He would have described himself as a lovable old drunk. That's mm-hmm. what he was. But he was dropped off on the doorstep of our outreach late one Sunday night. And so I get him hooked up, I get him a ride to rehab. We're waiting for the van to come get him, and we're outside sitting on the curb. And he brings it up. He starts talking to me. He says, have you ever read the Bible? Have you ever read Job and Moses? And just, man, there's just so many crazy characters in there, and mm-hmm. everybody's struggling and rambling around. And I'm just listening to this guy. And he says, you know, at one point he says, you know, he said, maybe grace is so amazing, he said, because God came down here and walked a mile in our shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, and maybe, you know, after Jesus took off those shoes and got back to heaven, he said, Dad, go easy on them. It's rough down there.
Very good.
And so I'm thinking, man, you know, here's this guy who's really, quite honestly, still drunk. He's still pretty tipsy. And here he is giving me one of the greatest Sunday night sermons I've ever heard, one that has stuck to me all of this time. And one that had a lot of truth in it to me. And there were so many characters. You know, I was talking to somebody earlier this week about the book, and I said, you know, this is not a book about me leading these lost people and broken people to the Lord. I said, it's about how they led me towards the Lord.
It's
about what they taught me about grace, what they taught me about God's ways and mercy and hope. And so, you know, there's so many characters. Oh, my gosh. You know, I told somebody else, I didn't see hundreds of people. I saw thousands and thousands of people. So hopefully this will do well, and because I could write 10 more books.
Do you bother to define success in your work? And if you do, how?
Oh.
How do you define success? Or maybe you don't bother.
Well, the you know, with crisis work, success, and I don't remember if the quote got into this book, but one of my colleagues had said, you know, in this field, success is when nobody dies or tries to set the world on fire.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've got a pretty low bar set. If you can just keep them alive, if you can just get them to rehab, that is success. But, you know, on a different level for me personally, success was when you made that connection, and it was just two human beings struggling through life, and they meet in that honest place. That was success to me, and thank God I got that so many nights and so many times.
What do you want the reader to get out of this book?
Boy, you know, there's so many questions that I'm having to think of the first time. I should know these. I hope it makes people think deep, and I hope it makes people laugh, and maybe see things a little bit differently. And, you know, I hope something in my ragged little stories brings people hope. Because, brother, in the dark, lonely places, and we're all the same. We're all the same.
And I can tell our listeners, I believe that's a good definition, Jamie, because that's what it does as I've been reading it. Again, folks, the book is called Midnight Jesus. It's by Jamie Blaine, who is called the Late Night Psychiatric Crisis Guy. Where can people get a copy of this book, Jamie?
You can get this book anywhere. Books are sold. You can get it at Books a Million, Amazon. Target, I think, has a... I think you can get a 10% off Target if you get it this week, or any of the Christian bookstores as well.
Jamie, thanks for being with us today on LifeQuest.
Oh, brother, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure, and I really enjoyed talking with you.
The publisher of this book, Midnight Jesus, by Jamie Blaine, who is Thomas Nelson, has provided me with three extra copies to give to you. And you can get your free copy if you write me with your name, and don't forget your address. The email is lifequest@lifetalk.net. As I said, I've got several copies to give away to you, our listeners. Email me, lifequest@lifetalk.net. Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. This program comes to you from studios in the Meadowglade Church, Battleground, Washington.